Welcome to Doctor's Orders with your host, Dr. Baker. Now let's join today's program.
Hello, everybody. Happy Financial Friday. I know for many people, this is the best time of the week for them because it's ushering them right into the weekend. I know for us on this show, and if you've been following our show, that this is the day that we talk specifically about money. And so you have to wait all week in order to talk about money here on the show. And speaking of which, I am Dr. Baker. I am your host. I am the owner of the only business hospital in the world, servicing 14 countries. And my only reason for waking up is to make sure that you're doing better in your business and that your business is working for you. So we always want to do that to make sure that you're healthy. And today I have a very special guest. I'm really excited to speak with him today. And I'm excited for you all to hear him as we're going to talk about the stock market. But if anyone wants to join our conversation today, our call-in number is 859-291-2255. Once again, that's 859-291-2255. And if you want to send me a message directly, you can at info@drbaker.us. Once again, that is info@drbaker.us. So if any of you have been following the show for any amount of time, what you will notice is that we're taking different aspects, different elements, different realities, if you will, in the world, and then we are translating them to, number one, your business and how to make you healthier as a business owner. You know, we're specifically talking about it, you know, small business owners, but it would include all, but mainly small business, which is $50 million and under or 500 employees or less. And so that includes micro boutique businesses, mom and pop shops, startup founders. Is that my job is to ensure that you all understand certain things that maybe you've asked questions but never received answers, maybe you wondered about but didn't know where exactly to get those answers, or maybe we bring up things that maybe you've never even thought about. But the goal is to take these topics and make them relevant for your everyday life. And in today's segment, we're going to look at how the stock market is vitally important to an individual. And when we say to an individual, once again, if you're a business owner of any type, you created that business for two reasons. But the first reason, no matter what we like to say, is that you created it to make money. You know, you have to generate revenue in order to have a business. And so generating revenue is vital. It's important. It's the most fundamental portion of the operation. But then number two, you might have done it because it was a passion or because you had a skill set. But ultimately, the goal is to generate enough revenue to take care of your livelihood, provide for whatever your wants and needs might be. And part of that comes to retirement. And one thing that is widely published, the information is clear and it's abundant, that business owners of all levels do not do a great job of retirement or credit or just having savings in general. Oftentimes when you find the average business owner, you're looking at a person that is dumping all they have into the business and they're neglecting themselves. You know, if you listen to some of the, I would say, most popular financial gurus, they will always tell you, well, make sure that you pay yourself first. And paying yourself first, in one instance, looks like paying yourself a check, if you will. And there's many business owners that's gone a long time and they have not paid themselves a check. But it also has to do with make sure that you put some away for later, because the danger happens is that you now progress in age, you're still working your company, but you've done everything else in that company. You provided for your employees, but you haven't provided for yourself. And so how do you go about doing that? And there's a host of ways to do it. And we want to talk about one of those ways today. And so my guest today is Dan Hawkins. And Dan Hawkins is extremely proficient in the stock market. Not only is he amazing at it just for himself, but he's also wonderful at teaching others how to participate in the stock market in a way that allows them to take control of their own portfolios and help them understand the market. So therefore, it's not this foreign entity, but it's something that we now can engage in. So without further ado, I'd like to bring in my guest today, Dan Hawkins. How are you doing today, sir?
I am blessed, JC. It's good to be here.
Fantastic. And so in that instance, want to be able to talk to everyone today a little bit about just kind of the trading. And Dan goes, you know, he and I go back some time in which we both had a lot of questions in the stock market many years ago. And in that instance, we had made determinations that we would look at the stock market a little bit differently because number one, that there's tools available today that just simply didn't exist in yesteryear. And so, Dan, what I'd like for you to kind of weigh in on is what were some of your revelations way back when you looked at your own portfolio or you looked at your own retirement plan and some of the shocking realities that you noticed that caused you to change your paradigm?
First of all, a lot of companies or businesses, they may offer like 401ks or something that sounds good. Like when I first jumped into the market, I had very little knowledge of it. But of course, everybody knows like, hey, the stock market is a way I can make money or possibly retire off of. So I did the typical thing of invested in my 401k. I had a small company match. And then, of course, when you set it up, there's a little thing says that would you like a money manager to take care of this for you? And I said, well, I don't know what I'm doing, so might as well let the money managers do it for me and hope that they're looking out for my best interest. Quickly, I found out that after looking at my portfolio for about 2 years, I realized the amount of return was about 2%. And I was looking at the things that my potential money manager that had my account, they're investing in, and it looked like the things they were investing in was not in my best interest. So that was the first shock. The second shock was when I went to go change it to say, hey, I'm going to try to pick my own mutual funds. They kind of give you the idea of, they kind of scare you. They say, well, you don't know what you're doing. It's better to let us have it. Now, they charge you a monthly fee for this. So I was like, well, I'm only making 2%. I will try it myself. If I can't figure it out, I'll go ahead and get back on the program. Well, within 1 month of me changing my mutual funds to things that just had consistent dividends, my portfolio went from 2% to 11%.
Now, I want to pause you there real quick. I want to pause you right there. You're talking from 2% to 11%. So you've got people out here, number one, may not even be watching their portfolios at any level. Maybe they have an IRA because, you know, they're self-directing that way and they're not really paying attention to it. But in the event that they are, they might be looking at their returns going in reverse or maybe they're remaining flat. And what you're saying is by making a simple change, you were able to raise it 8, 9, 10 points just because you decided to take an interest in it. Is that right?
100% correct.
Okay, keep going. I don't want to cut you off, but I want the listeners to understand how important that is.
Well, I started digging into it more. It's like, well, these money managers, they say that they're in my best interest. Why would they put me into mutual funds that have consistently even taken a loss for the last 5 years? That's when I started diving a little deeper, and unfortunately, it, just like anything else, a lot of the money managers are in it for commission basis. So sometimes they have agreements where as long as they're able to sign up a new client, they're going to get paid regardless of if that mutual fund is doing well for you or not. Not saying that all money managers are bad, but some of them are really in it for themselves and not for you.
Well, I think the best reality, and this goes for any business owner with the services that they provide, is that you want the relationships between yourself and your clients to be symbiotic, where, yes, you're earning good compensation and a good wage for the service or product that you're providing, but you also have the best interest of your client or your consumer at hand. And what I personally know through experience and through seeing just different types of businesses throughout the world is that sometimes that's a very hard teeter-totter, is to also look out for them while, you know, running my business model to ensure that I maximize profits. And that's why in a scenario such as your retirement fund or your overall portfolio, it's important for you to understand what is in it, what is it doing in the event that you actually have investments going in some place. And that's essentially what you're recommending. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Right. So in this journey that you've had, is that you're looking at, all right, now that I don't like the results that I'm seeing, you now are charged with doing something about it. You know, well, what did doing something about it look like for you in your experience when you first started?
Just basic research. A lot of times there's a lot of information out there, and when I first got into the market, it does seem like it's a different language, right? So what I started with is things that I had a little bit of understanding in. My favorite thing that I really like to talk about would be dividends. I didn't understand exactly how it happened, but I did know like dividends are always a return on investment. The more I started researching, the more I found out that not every company gives out dividends, for one. And then for two, the frequency of the dividends depends on which company or mutual fund you invest in. So that's really what really started the journey of diving into how much interest do I really want to take into this. And since I was able to change my 2% to 11%, I'm wondering if I could do better with more knowledge and education.
Well, I think that's how a lot of times it should work, and it doesn't always work that way. But once you're able to see success and opportunity, how do you grab opportunity in a way to where it becomes something that you can catapult, where you can leverage it for your benefit? And what I'm hearing you say is that you saw that success or you saw that opportunity, and you said, well, wait a minute, I was able to get this with this amount of effort. Well, what happens if I double the effort, if I triple the effort, if I really dive in and submerge myself into the process, what could I do then? Is that about the way that your journey went?
Yes. The other motivation was I watched my father, right? He worked for 40 years plus, right? And now he's finally getting a pension to where he gets a guaranteed check. However, I realized in this day and age, a lot of companies do not offer pensions anymore, so it's more up to you to figure that out yourself. So I saw the opportunity to wondering if I could actually create my own pension and I don't actually have to wait for a retirement age. That's what really sparked my interest, and I was able to find out or create my own strategy of getting dividends to supplement your income.
I want to jump in real quick, because that is such a remarkable strategy and thought process, but it's not easy. And when I say it's not easy, is that if you're not, you know, well-versed in it, or at least the belief system is that you have to be well-versed in the market, but most people aren't in the market at all. So the entire universe of the market can be daunting. It can be scary, but you made a statement and said, well, heck, if people aren't offering pensions, well, let's flip that. If you're the business owner, you may not be offering pensions at all. So not only are you not offering them to your employees, but you also don't have anything for yourself. And so you would then look back after having a company for 15, 20, 30 years and saying, well, I don't really have much to show for in this instance. I'm hoping my business is worth something, so therefore it's attractive enough to be purchased. But in the event that it isn't, or when you sell your assets off, maybe it just covers your debts, or maybe it's not as valuable as you may have anticipated for it to be, now what do you have? And that's when a strategy such as dividends comes into play. And we're just saying one out of a host of strategies, but in your world, you said, what if I could create my own pension? So then let's continue to talk about that, because there had to be exploration there. There had to be trial and error there. What did that look like for you?
The research is probably the most daunting part, right? There's so many stocks out there. There's so many mutual funds. There's things that we call ETFs or electronic traded funds. There's so much information out there that it is overwhelming. So what I've learned to do is focus on one area, right? So if I'm going to look at dividends, I want to look at some companies. You can do a basic search of what companies give out dividends. Then you actually research each one to see how often they give it out, and then what was their past history, right? Because not every company gives out dividends consistently. Sometimes they do it only when the company's doing well. But there's other companies that actually give it out consistently. So it really depends on what you're looking for, right? So for a person who's like my father, who is looking forward to that check or needs that check, I started researching companies that give out consistent dividends at a consistent rate, even when the economy is both up and down.
Well, see, that's a unique perspective there, because as a casual listener, and when I say casual listener, I'm saying not a person that's following the money market channel or Bloomberg or a person that isn't doing high-level research, if you're just a person that doesn't even know that you've ever even had stocks and you've had life insurance or a 401k in the past, that you don't even understand these things, what you're going to think is, well, if the market's down, you lose money. And I don't want to participate in that because I can't control when that market is up or when it's down. So they see it as a big fear factor because down equals loss. But what you're saying in this instance is that, well, no, down doesn't equal loss in all cases. And especially in the case of a dividend, some companies are paying dividends regardless of the economic climate, whether it's up or down. Is that right?
That is 100% correct. And it's a very important factor to understand. Because if my dad is looking for this check every month, the bills that come in, they don't care about the economy being up or down. They still want to be paid. So it's important that if you invest in something, you want to know your return on investment is going to still happen regardless if the economy is up or down. So that was a huge factor when I decided what to invest in.
Well, in this case, is that a person may say, well, you know, Dan Hawkins, you're sitting here saying that, yeah, it's easy to research it to you because you know what, where to look and how to research. How does a person even get started to research? I know that the internet is here and I can put something in my web browser, but is that the best way to go? Is there a system I need to buy? I know, and I'll qualify that, is that I remember, you know, coming from a newspaper age where you would actually go to the newspaper and take a look at the stocks in the newspaper every day or every week. Well, what does that look like to someone today?
The best way to get started and would be is first opening up a money market account. There's definitely many different platforms out there. I do have my personal favorite just because there's a lot of tools on the money market website that helps you with research. Like I said, a basic Google search will at least give you some information. But when I say like really researching, you want to know past history for number X amount of years. I want to know what happened when, how did the company perform during COVID? How did the company perform 10 years ago? Those specifics usually come by actually opening up a platform to where you can actually dive deeper if you wanted to. My personal favorite would be Charles Schwab. There's definitely a lot of tools on that website that you can really use for research.
Now, in that instance, since I'm a business owner, I'm really busy. I've got a lot going on with just keeping the business afloat. You know, not to mention my dollars might be tight. I might have to scrutinize every single dollar that comes into the company, or at least from a personal standpoint. Maybe I'm a business owner that has not received a check from myself in months or even years. When you tell me Charles Schwab, all I think about is that Charles Schwab is, you know, is a money grab, if you will. Like, that's going to cost me a lot to participate, or I'm not going to understand what's inside of that tool. So it becomes more of a time absorber and a waster. Is that the reality, or is that just a fear?
That is definitely a fear. To actually opening up an account is absolutely free. Even if you just put money into a money market, it is actually a better investment than putting it in a typical checking or savings account. Money markets have a better interest rate just in general. So if you're just a person who just want to just open it up and see what's going to happen, but really don't want to spend the money, you can actually open up the platform, deposit X amount of dollars in there and just let it sit there, and you can still have the access for research absolutely free.
So if I wanted to use this Charles Schwab account as a savings account, and I opened it up and said, okay, eventually I'm going to learn what to do inside of this platform. I'm going to take hold of my own portfolio, my own assets. But in the meantime, I just want to park, you know, $1,000 here. Could they just park the $1,000 there while they continue to research the platform and learn more about stocks, dividends, bonds, and the like?
That is 100% correct. Yes, you can just park it and then do all the research you want absolutely at your own accord.
And so when we're talking about, yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, and while doing that, it's better than, the reason why I say it's better than a savings account, for most people's savings account, I remember having X amount of dollars and I'm barely getting 1 or 2 cents a quarter, right? For most money markets, especially with Charles Schwab, through a lease are getting a better interest rate than 0.001. I believe last time I looked at it, you were at least getting about 1% return on investment, which is still
so. In that instance, I would argue that many business owners are even uncertain ever, or even are concerned about if their savings account is generating them, any revenue or yielding them any profit from it. It's more about convenience and accessibility. Is that now I've got a, let's say I've got a First Financial account or I've got a Chase account. Well, I know that my money in the savings account, if I need to move it over because I need to get the cash quickly because of something in my business, I know that that money is there without penalty. Is that behavior the same when I open a brokerage account?
It won't be as liquid, but however, it's within 24 hours. So it also, like anything, there's a fee. So if you wanted to do a wire transfer, you can get it within a couple hours. So yes, you can. The other part about that is most time people link their money market with their checking or savings account. So you can actually transfer money through a balance transfer, and that usually takes between 24 to 48 hours.
Okay, so therefore we're able to demystify the reality that you can open up a brokerage account, play inside of that account just to learn, and you can do that at your own pace. I'm certain that there's tools inside of the platforms and help desk that'll help you navigate certain aspects of the tool. So therefore, it makes it easier for you, a little bit more convenient to ease your comfort level. But the most important part is having the mindset to say, you know what, I'd like to supplement my efforts or lead my efforts. And what we're suggesting in this instance is that maybe you do have a financial strategist and that person you feel is pretty good, but now you have the ability to kind of look it over yourself or even learn as you go to ensure that your portfolio is taken care of. And there's ways to do that in your spare time, but through these tools that are not accessible. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Right. So let's look at it from a stock standpoint. I know many people are concerned about the economy right now. I think unless you've been under a rock, we've got 40-year high inflation. We've got recession. So even by definition, we've had two quarters of loss, if you will, in the gross domestic product. And so therefore the term recession gets used. But in these instances, let's just look at the stocks themselves. And, we talk about stock selection. People will know that, well, maybe I should buy Amazon or maybe I should buy Uber. Well, what are the pros and the cons of just buying a stock?
I guess in the stock world, a lot of times when you select a stock, usually people are emotionally based, right? So when the economy is good, everybody talks about what's on top, right? So usually it's whether at the company's highs. So you're talking about your Amazon, your Uber, your Tesla. And a lot of times people get caught up in the trap of, okay, everybody's talking about it, now I should buy it. Unfortunately, that behavior is usually people understand you want to buy low and sell high, right? But if you're emotionally based, when you're hearing all this talk about it, about something, it's usually at its hitting its peak or high point. The opposite behavior would be is when the economy is down, like we're doing right now, people run for the market. Like, hey, I'm afraid I'm going to lose all my money, so they end up pulling out. That typical behavior is the way to lose money quickly. So actually, instead of pulling out from the market, right now is the best time to buy because everything is actually at a discount or at its very low point. That's only if you believe the market is going to get better in the future.
Let's look at a couple of those realities. Is that when something is down and what you hear is doom and gloom, because if you're watching the news doesn't go into a deep dive. They'll just flat out tell you that the market's down and that it has been, or that it's lost so many basis points. And you may be unfamiliar with what a basis point might be, or if you're reading things online and you don't have legitimate background information on who's providing the information, they might tell you that, well, hey, the market is down and it's a bad time, you're going to lose money. Well, you combat that in what ways? And so when I say what ways, Is it strictly because of the research? Are there certain general rules and principles that a person that wants to buy a stock can just simply lean on? Or is it all the factors combined?
It is a combination of factors and research. And research looks different from every person, right? I definitely like going over history, right? If I know I have a company, or I call it a blue chip stock, right? A company that's been around for more than 10 plus years, 10, 20 years. You can actually look at the research of last time the economy had a low. How low did they go? And then were they able to recover, and how long was the recovery, right? So for a person who really doesn't like to take high risk, and risk is also different for everybody else, if you look at a company that's been around 20 plus years, even though you see the value of the stock at its low point, would be a good idea to invest in them if you believe that the company is still going to surpass this doom and gloom stage, because it's usually temporary. So actually what I see in this type of economy is an opportunity versus a typical loss.
Now, you talk about, you said the word belief. You know, if an individual believes that it will turn or that it will perform, and then we also talk about emotion. Are we categorizing emotion similarly as belief? And let me qualify that a little bit more. Is the belief based on hard, tangible realities, or is some of it subjective and you're piecing it together?
Research, like numbers and charts don't lie. So if you actually can see, like, hey, let's look at Tesla, right? Most people know Tesla's been around for quite some time now, and they've had some ups and downs, right? But however, looking at the charts, Tesla, regardless of how the economy goes, they still keep moving forward in business, and they're becoming more and more popular. Now, difference between looking at the charts or versus, hey, you know what, I like the car, I'm going to buy it, that would be more of a emotion, right? But if you're actually looking at the charts and looking at the research of how the stock has moved throughout the years, then you actually have more tangible reason to believe in something or to invest in something when you have all the research or you've done the research versus I just like the car.
So when you're doing research, looking at these companies, where do you place most of your weight? Are you placing your weight on current history, meaning that what have they done in the last quarter or what have they done in the last year? Or is it really the historical data looking at certain pockets of time over the last 3 years to 5 years?
Historical data, for sure, will give you a better assessment of what it could potentially do.
Okay, and then why is that? Why do we point more to the historic as opposed to the current? So, for an example, if we're looking at energy and fuels, and then all of a sudden we have this war in Ukraine, we have a president change, you've got different elections coming up in different states, and so all of these play a part in the supply chain, the demand for fossil fuels and the like. Would that not trump where that industry has been over the last 3 to 4 years, or is this situational based on how long you think it will be down based on other like trends?
The reason why I like historical data, because history tends to repeat itself, right? So if you're able to look at historical data as, hey, within the last, even if you go past 3, 5, if you go to 10 years, right? Usually within 10 years, there was some major economical disaster that happened that could have affected that industry, right? Mm-hmm. So it gives you the idea or the more certainty of, hey, even with the last economical disaster, this company or this stock was able to sustain. It did lose its value, but it did take time for it to get back to where it usually was or surpass it every time.
And so if you're in there looking, then it's a really good general rule to say, all right, what has the stock done over the last 3 to 5 years? How volatile has it been? And volatile is another one of those words that feels and seems really scary. Well, we're just really talking about the movement, how much up and down and left and right does it actually go, and how frequently does it do that? And so you're looking at different metrics that outline some of that. what are some of the other metrics that become important for someone that's looking at a stock for them to pay attention to and say, this is something I really need to keep my eye on?
We did talk about dividends a little bit. You can also look, I use the word as blue chip or S&P 500, right? So the S&P 500 are the top 500 companies selected. So if you are looking at a stock that is part of the S&P 500, that means to even be qualified in there, a company has showed a historical history that they make continual movement, positive movement for their investors. So you're looking at your P&Gs, your Johnson & Johnson, those type of companies. It's easier for you to invest and sleep at night knowing that these companies have been around and they've been able to survive economical disasters.
You know, I want to talk about that a little more because it's really important. We have to take a station break for identification. And today's Financial Freedom segment is brought to you by Pro Elite Training. That's Pro Elite, the word pro and the word elite, all one word, Pro Elite Training. You can find it on your web browser at getproelite.com, or you can find Pro Elite Training in your Google and Play stores. Learn how to train with athletes, professional athletes, to increase your rhythm, tempo, and pace. So if you're a serious athlete and you're looking to increase your basketball game or your football game, download Pro Elite to increase your rhythm, tempo, and pace. If you're a novice athlete or somebody that just wants to enjoy recreation or really have a really good workout, Pro Elite is for you as well. It's a freemium model, so you get hundreds of drills that cost you nothing, so please download it today. And if you want to work out at a high level, the premium model is just $4.99. So download Pro Elite Training today to increase your rhythm, tempo, and pace. So going back, Dan Hawkins, and by the way, everyone, we have Dan Hawkins here, who's teaching us about the stock market and helping us understand essentially what a business owner could do to take control of their own portfolio and their own asset pool. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us in at 859-291-2255. Once again, that's 859-291-2255. And then you can write us directly at info@drbaker.us. So Dan Hawkins, we were talking about, you know, the S&P 500. And so you might hear terms if you're a novice person or you're a casual listener, and you might hear NASDAQ and S&P 500. But the explanation that the S&P 500 are the top 500 companies in a given period that have been indexed to then display economic strength or really an economic indicator of what's going on. If that's a good barometer to say, okay, where's the market? But also, I can compare my stocks to the S&P 500, whether it's current or historically, to even help my decision-making. Is that right?
That is correct.
And so when you're looking at that, you know, what are some of the metrics that you would then want to compare? You know, is volume inside of a stock important? How much is trading at? Is that important? What are some of the key factors there?
All of it's important. So when you see volume, you can see how many people are actually trading, buying and selling stock or ETF at any given day. Volume, and you use the word volatility, right? Volatility, another way, is like the fear, the uncertainty, right? So the more, when you hear somebody say a stock is very volatile, it means like they are really uncertain on the direction it's going to go. If you're a novice, trader, that it kind of creates fear, right? We all know it can make a big jump up or down or positive or negative, at any given time. So it really depends on like risk level, of each individual. If you're a person who is looking for, like what we talked about, a supplemental income, you probably want to stay away from volatile stocks. You would rather stick with something that is very, very even kill, and it provides that dividend that we were talking about earlier, so you don't have to worry about the volatility. But there is definitely opportunity in volatile stocks if you're willing to take the risk. So it depends on what type of business owner. If you're looking to make a, roll the dice, That's where you can look at volatile stocks, or crypto would be another one that's pretty volatile market in general. Or he can be one of those traders say, hey, you know, I worked really hard for this money. I do not want to risk. I want to keep my risk at a very low rate.
Well, I want to look at two things that you just mentioned. So I'll come back to cryptocurrency in a moment. But when we're looking at stability versus volatility, and you know, there as a business owner, sometimes, well, not really sometimes, all of us are at different stages. So you have the new business owner that's just starting out, and that person can be in their early 20s. You'd have a new business owner that's just starting out in their 50s. And you've got a scenario where it's everything in between. In the event that you don't have a portfolio of any type, and let's say that you're in your late 30s or you're in your mid 40s, that's going to lead to one type of investment tolerance. And let's say you're a person that does not have a portfolio. You've been running your business for a very long time, and now you're close to 60, or you are, you're 62 or 63. And you're saying, well, I'm not even sure I've got enough energy to continue to push the business at its level, and I don't see a buyer in sight. I need to do something. That means that your tolerance for risk might be a little bit higher in the event that you don't have a really large nest egg saved. And so when someone is looking with these types of parameters in their personal life to say, how do I make this decision? I typically would just call a financial strategist. But listening to us today, they might say, well, you know what? I think I can figure out, or I would like to go into the stock market. Are there any key rules that you lean on at any given time for your own investment risk tolerance, if you will? So whether you should play it risky for a higher reward, or should you play it safer for stability?
Like you said, every investor and every business owner, every scenario may be different. However, my personal general rule is to diversify. Diversity will help you in any type of economical situation. So I'm not just investing just in automobiles. Maybe invest into oil and stock. Invest it, or oil and gas. Might want to invest in some electronics. Invest into the pharmaceutical. So when you actually have a more diverse portfolio, that means if one industry is getting hit, usually another industry is doing well. For example, right now, even though the majority of the market is doing poorly, oil and gas stocks seem to be skyrocketing right now. And that just helped. And that's someone that, not knowing what's exactly going on, nobody really has a crystal ball. But when you diversify, usually it takes the risk out of everything of your whole portfolio looking like it's going to crash. Usually something is going to do well and something will be dropping at this around the same time. So, or when the company or when the economy does get better, everything seems to be rising at a substantial rate.
Well, thinking about a term such as diversify, you know, that's another one of those scary terms, but really you're just mixing it up. You're just having options. And when we say options, that's also a sneaky term, because options is a form of trading, which is a more complicated version, one that we don't recommend that any new person or non-participant ever engage in. But nevertheless, it is a way to either supplement your dollars or diversify your portfolio or hedge another strategy. Don't want to jump heavily into it so that we don't confuse the audience, but you also deal in options. Is that right?
Yes, I do. Options can really boost a portfolio if done correctly.
Which I think in this instance, the operative words are if done correctly, which makes that part the scarier portion of dealing with stocks, because you can then put dollars into it and then lose them faster than you put them in there when you don't understand what you've done on the side of options, which stocks, or just, you know, a basic stock purchase would be what we would call a safer way to go, because in that instance, you own the stock. If you don't mind, just explain the differences between just owning a stock and then participating with options.
Okay, so when you own a stock, that means you own a piece of that company, right? Option trading is you're able, instead of buying the stock, you're leveraging, saying that options is easier to explain like as an insurance policy. So you're essentially you're holding X amount of shares for someone else for a fee. To actually have options, it doesn't mean I actually own the stock. It means I am leveraging it and saying that if need be, I would purchase it at a certain level based upon the agreement. So options are more of an agreement with another party. And you can make substantial amount of money off of options without even owning the stock. So that's the biggest piece is stock. If you actually buy a stock, you actually own a piece. When you do an option, you don't necessarily actually have to own the stock that you're leveraging. However, to do one option, you're leveraging at least one bundle or 100 shares of that stock.
So in that instance, and I'm just thinking about if I'm a listener here and I'm sitting there trying to decipher what this means, is that if I wanted Amazon stock, I now have to buy Amazon outright. And so if I buy it outright, I have to have enough money at that time to make that purchase in order to own it. And so when you think about Amazon, in which I'm not sure exactly, where Amazon is buying today. I mean, is it around $1.15? Is it or $115, somewhere around there? Am I right?
Yes. I think it was at $114 as of yesterday.
So for me to buy one stock in Amazon, I would have to have $115 that I'm willing to give in order to have that stock. And then in that instance, I can buy multiple shares of that stock. Is that right?
That is correct.
Right. But with an option, how much money do I need to then execute an option on that same stock, if you will?
So remember the one bundle is important. So you get the lease to even do options. To actually do an option where you own the stock, you would actually have to have 100 shares. So we're talking about Amazon. So that would be 115 times 100. So is that 11,500?
Mm-hmm. So you would have to have $11,500 now in order to participate.
Correct. Now, if you're doing an option trade, you only need to have a certain percentage of that. So I can actually leverage 100 shares of Amazon through one option with less than, in that example, with less than $500.
And so someone might hear that and say, heck, I can get the same amount, or it feels as if I have the same amount for under $500 when I had to come up with over $11,000. But you have to understand the strategy of the option, and you stand to lose a lot more, and you don't own the stock. Is that right?
That is correct.
That's why you have to understand what you're doing, what the strategy is. But from a basing building block standpoint, is really just understanding stocks by themselves and knowing that these stocks are from publicly traded companies, if you will, and that they have a price point, and that price point can be compared to some of the larger companies in the S&P 500 to determine where is it in comparison to them to help your decision making. All right, let's jump into crypto then, because we just talked about Amazon and that's a stock that people would know. Well, crypto is something that we've all heard of, but what is it really? And then how do you even participate? And are the rules the same as owning a stock?
We'll start with that. Are the rules the same? They are not the same. Stock markets usually have a specific time to where you're allowed to trade. Crypto market is actually open 24 hours a day. So the rules are quite different. The research is quite different. So a basic idea of cryptocurrency is someone thought of an idea of instead of having all these different types of United States dollar, euro, all these types of different values of dollars all over the world, cryptocurrency is a way to where it's the same all the way across the world. So the idea of cryptocurrency is attractive to many. However, there's so many out there right now, it really makes it confusing and a very volatile market because you're depending on that your neighborhood Walmart, Kroger is going to one day accept that as a form of currency. As of right now, very few companies are accepting crypto as part of a currency. So a lot of people, you're basically investing on an idea.
Well, you know, in this instance, is that it's attractive because, you know, people will tell you you need to get in now before everyone else gets in. You stand to make a lot more money. But, you know, as you said, there's so many of them. I mean, there's over 9,000 different types of cryptos. So you would have to make a declaration on, well, which one is which and how do they perform? How do I measure their performance? You mentioned that the rules being different in our stock market is a, what is it, 9 to 4 Monday through Friday is when the trading or when that market is active. But with crypto being 24/7, it's much harder to gauge in that instance. Is that right?
That is correct.
And so if I'm a business owner and I'm saying, well, heck, you know, I really need to beef up my asset pool. I really need to enhance my portfolio. I like to retire one day or I would like to retire soon. Well, crypto becomes attractive based on the aggressive nature and some of the stories you've heard, but we haven't been able to qualify all of the stories of how much money's been put into it, then how much money can you get on a return. Because it's so volatile, it's harder to predict, which then means as much as you may gain, you may lose significantly more. If you're looking at something with historical data attached to it, you can pretty much predict it and say, well, hey, I may not hit the home run, but I could hit a lot of singles. And hitting a lot of singles in this amount of time actually equals a home run. And now I can budget a little bit better. Is that more of the recommendation that we're talking about today?
Yes. Yeah. If you're definitely looking for a pension or a way of supplemental income, hitting singles is far better than hoping to scratch the right lottery ticket. You know, I'd rather have a guaranteed $100, $200 a month versus I hope I make my $2,000 or lose $1,000, right? So that would be a difference of risk tolerance.
Well, let's look at the math on some of these stocks. And so let's go back to one of your original experiences, how you were able to take control of what you had in, you know, your company's, you know, savings plan, and you went from 2% to 11%. How are we able to dictate or determine what we're able to gain from a particular stock or a potential strategy, such as a dividend strategy? How do we know that, you know what, if I participate in this way, I stand to make 5% or 6% based on my historical research? How does one really know that that's what they're doing so that they can execute it a little bit more soundly and more appropriately over time?
Reword that question.
Okay, so if I'm using the stock market as a way to supplement my income, then you have a scenario where I would like to kind of know what I'm going to get. One reason why I put it in the bank, and even if it's only 1% or even 0.01%, I know that I'm going to get that and my money will still be there. If I remove my money from there and I put it in this brokerage account, and even if I tried a dividend strategy, how do I calculate what I think I'll get so that I can essentially routine my behavior to have a consistent behavior to say, you know, I'm glad I took it from my bank account to this brokerage account because instead of my 0.05%, I'm now going to get 4%. How does one manage that reality?
I understand. So, once again, historical data it definitely helps. But however, a lot of these blue chip stocks that have been doing this for years, that are giving out dividends for years consistently, they actually tell you how much, if you invest in their company by a certain date, this is what you're guaranteed to have. And they tell you the date you have to get in, and it shows you the date that they pay out. That's the way where you can actually hedge or figure out how much you're going to get. So, for example, even though it sounds small, I can give you one example of Prospect or PSEC. They give out 6 cents per month for their dividends. So 6 cents, what is 6 cents? Really doesn't sound like much, but 6 cents times 100, now you're looking at $6, right? So now, so it also counts for how many shares are you're able to purchase at a certain time, right? So if I'm able to get 100 shares of this specific stock called PSEC, I'm guaranteeing myself $6 per month, since that stock pays out monthly. I can guarantee that as part of my income, because they've consistently done it for year after year, month after month.
And so that was the answer that I'm looking for, so that I could reiterate that to our listening audience, is that now all of a sudden I know that I'm going to get 6% as opposed to the 0.01% that I may have received beforehand. I now have taken control, and because I've taken the time to do some research, ask a few questions, play inside of the brokerage account that's free to me, now all of a sudden I can at least say, no matter what, I'm going to get 6% out of here. Why? Because historically, that's what they've given out for the last 29 years. Even in the middle of the pandemic and even through the bailout of the banks, they've continuously and consistently given out 6 cents or 6%. So therefore, I know that that's something that I can do. In that instance, that now stabilizes my investment portfolio, and it allows me to have more control over what I'm doing. So therefore, I can build up my risk tolerance. And I would recommend, or even, you know, venture to say, that as a business owner, you've already taken the risk as a business owner. You've decided that you are betting on yourself, as opposed to going to get a W-2 job to say, you know what, I want to work this way. Well, you could also do the same thing with your retirement or your asset pool by saying, I can still bet on myself. I learned this industry. I learned how to run a business. I can also learn how to manage my portfolio to a level. And even if I'm not managing the portfolio, I'm at least versed enough to have a good conversation with my financial strategist or my broker, and then look at where my returns are coming from, so I can be an active participant in what my future looks like. Is that the position that we're taking here in this call here, Danny?
We are.
Right. And so thinking about that, you know, since you've taken over yours, not only was it more about your ability to help yourself, but you started to help others understand their own portfolios and how to get it started and walk them through this journey as well. Is that right?
That is correct. My passion is educating others to do it for themselves. So it's one thing for someone to tell you, but I would like to empower you to do it yourself, because it really isn't that hard. Unfortunately, a lot of people are maybe driven by fear, where they're just afraid to invest in an area that they don't know anything about. But it really isn't as difficult if you really care about the amount of money or the amount of time or investment you put into yourself. It's worth the time to figure out how I can make money with my money.
Well, since you've been helping others, what have been some of the things that have been the most shocking that you've learned since helping others figure out their portfolio or understand how to self-direct their own retirements, whether it's good or bad? What's been the most shocking, or something that maybe you didn't anticipate while helping others?
A lot of people, the amount of fear, right? So a lot of people will always give you their horror story, but nobody will give you their success story correctly. You know, even though the information is out there, taking the first initial step is always the hardest. So, for example, even for my own father, right, he believes, you know, the old school mentality is better to have money under your mattress, right? So just getting him out of the mindset of, hey, won't you just try, put $1,000 in, just start it and see what it gives you. Very similar to a lot of people felt like CDs was a really good option. But when you start investigating what the banks do with the CDs, you have to lock up your money for a certain amount of time. And then if you let the bank hold your money for a certain amount of time, you may get maybe 0.25%. However, if you wanted to take it out early, the penalty was far greater than the amount you were going to get out. So, those little pieces of information, it's surprising where people just don't know, you know, and I feel like just being able to educate, a basic education of saying, hey, what are you doing with your money right now? Versus trying to hide under the mattress, realizing that you can make money with your money, or even just throwing in a savings account. Just the basic information that we just don't know, is surprising.
And then are they pleasantly surprised at any time at how much, I won't say easy because I don't think that's the right word, but how doable it is to participate in the stock market and self-direct.
Absolutely. So I like using my dad as an example because it did take some time for him to see. So once he was able to put $1,000 in and he's got his first paycheck from Schwab and or from the investments you put in, it will still come from the envelope that your money market is in. And he's like, well, maybe there is something to it. So just the idea of just taking the first initial step to see that this is real. And this is what millionaires have done for years, right? They're able to make the money, but they don't use their money. They're able to use someone else's or use the money they made from their investments. But their money that they initially put in just stays there. That part of changing our mindset from, you know, I want to hold on to it or keep my money locked up and hope that no one touches it, trying to get people out the side of that mentality of, hey, your money can make you money, is usually the biggest battle, especially if you've never been educated in that form of investing.
Well, I would say, as a business owner, the amount of liquidity you have, excuse me, is very important to running and operating the business. However, what you do in your personal life is also very important, and how you view money and then where do you place it? What buckets you have in it, if I could use the word bucket, to just signify that your money goes in different places. Obviously, you take care of where you live. In the event you have rent or a mortgage, then you have to take care of, you know, automobile, other bills, family needs. But then you start looking at, well, some of these dollars have to go back into the business. Some of these dollars need to go into retirement. And there's a way that with all of the products that you're selling or all the services that you're providing, that it would behoove you to allow your money to make money for you. And this is just one way to do it. If someone wanted to contact you and say, I need help in the market, can you guide me? I would like to take this journey. How can they find you?
Best way to find me is, or contact me is through email. You can do dhawkllc@gmail.com. Myself or my wife will reach out to you, and we'll just set up a Zoom call, and everybody's situation is different. So we can help guide you and teach you how to invest, and most importantly, teach you how to do it yourself.
And then give them that email address again and spell it out so we can make sure that we have it for them.
Yep. So it's Dhawk LLC. So it's dhawkllc@gmail.com.
Fantastic. Dan Hawkins, thanks so much for joining us today and educating our listeners on how they can take control of their own finances and what they can do to let their money work for them, and then essentially demystifying the stock market so it's not a scary feat. Once again, everybody, that is our show. This is Doctor's Orders. Today is Financial Friday, and I want your businesses to continue to get healthier. I want you to get healthier as a business owner. Well, hope you enjoy your weekend. Can't wait to speak with you all next week. Enjoy your time. All the best.
Thank you for joining us for Doctor's Orders. You can contact Dr. Baker by phone at 1-855-249-4677, by email at info@drbaker.us. You can learn more on our website at www.drbaker.us. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. right here on 1320 AM, 103.9 FM, and on www.1320thevoice.com.